Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Today is Tuesday, the 30th of June, 2020. Last day of the month. Now about to start the the second half of the year. And the number to call, 434-1790. WhatsApp will be 266-4862. Share your messages. My name is Lisa Gale. We go until 2 p.m. today. We have Mr. John Stout as our producer and all things technical. So when you call on the phone, you will hear Mr. John Stout. As I said, we're going until 2 p.m. today. Feel free to share your comments, your queries, your concerns, ask any questions, and let's have a conversation. Actually, on Sunday, I was watching a movie, and interestingly, the star said, Cut to the chase, sir, and just let's get down to brass tacks. And I had a broad smile. I went like, yes. And this is a series I've been watching, very interesting series. And this guy is the director out of the UK, and they were telling some stories. Very interesting series. And he said, let's get down to brass tacks. So let's get down to brass tacks today. I'm sure you have lots of discussions. I see a number of calls already, and we can talk about matters relating to the current impasse with the Guyana elections, the removal of the Lord Nelson statue, Liat and its plans for liquidating. We can talk about mental health. That's an issue that has come to the fore again. We can talk about how COVID has treated us, what has been the main impact, and as we evaluate how we as a country have come out of it, what are the lessons learnt? Are we capitalizing on those lessons learned and, so to speak, using the challenge of COVID to the advancement of the country so that we benefit both livelihoods and lives? And I want to commend, of course, the managers of the crisis, in particular the Czar, Mr. Richard Carter, as well as the health officials, ably led by Lieutenant Jeffrey Bostic, Minister of Health and Wellness. And I say that specifically because we've really come out looking good. I know this is not the end of it. As they have said to us, we cannot sit on our laurels. And not only just the leaders and the managers of the crisis, because you all are far more than just two people. There are many persons who are on the front line, but I'm speaking specifically to the managers because behind the scenes, we always forget the work and the strategy that has gone on. So kudos to you. And kudos as well to those heroes who've stuck to the protocols, whether it is a household that has banned the over 60s from leaving home. You know, many mothers and fathers have not left home. Aunts and uncles have had to stay in, and persons have decided, I will do what I need to do for you. I'll get your medication. I'll do everything that needs to be done. So thank you for those people who have followed and obeyed and made sure that things worked. And yes, I said we're not out of the woods, and I hope that we remember that and we still continue to be careful. I watched a lot, number of persons as I traveled throughout the length and breadth of Barbados during this COVID season. I know we were restricted, but I had to go places. And I want to commend the guardians, particularly many of the security guards and the persons who were dealing with other persons. Yes, we had some persons who did not exhibit the most emotional intelligence when they dealt with the public. But there were many other people who did, and I want to commend them. When I go to an establishment, there are persons who will take your temperature or ask a question or tell you to stand in the line, etc. We have some really good behaved people. And I've gone many places. I've gone to various establishments. And I really want to commend all those persons who would have been waiting for us, especially after the temporary open, or should I call it the soft opening before we would open tomorrow. On the full opening, we've had various levels various iterations of different protocols, whether it is number one, number two, up until number seven. And in those protocols, there were persons who had to do like you as a business had to actually employ someone, could be your staff member existing or it could be a new person, to manage the interface with the public. And those persons, I want to commend them as well, because they managed well. I would stop there, and I would say down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Gill.
Good morning.
I heard you mention just now about the Prime Minister. I must commend her by saying, when questioned about the Guyana affair, about the statement she made, she said she speaks the truth to that extent. Am I right?
Two things. I actually didn't even mention the Prime Minister. But thank you for bringing her in the discussion. I actually mentioned the Czar and the Lieutenant Jeffrey Colonel Boston.
All right, but
I guess she's on your mind. So feel free, share with us what you want to talk about.
You recall she had mentioned that when she was questioned, she said she's speaking the truth.
Yes, I read that.
And she had nothing else to say. Now, I wanted to talk to Peter, but since you're here, I think you're the right person. You are a Combermarian, right?
Say good morning. Good morning to you, sir. I hope that all is well with you.
Well, everybody can tell you.
Yes, I'm a Combermarian.
Good. Now, whether I tell you good morning or not, that only means that it is a good morning for you or it's a good morning for me.
It's just you being pleasant. Right?
I'm glad that you are pleasant. I know you are pleasant because I know all of your relatives, your in-laws,
But you don't know. I hear you always talking about my in-laws, but I don't hear you talking about my parents.
But that's why I can talk, you know, about Convermere.
Okay.
Right? Now, since we are on the grounds of speaking the truth, you ever read a book about Linda Crawford, who was a Combermarian also?
Early in my Combermere days, my history days, probably class form three.
Okay. Well, the point that I'm getting at this morning is that I'm advocating to the Combermereans. Here is a national hero that was not accepted or recognized in Barbados.
Not accepted by his own peers?
By the people who actually named them heroes, named the heroes.
Oh, not included into the settlement of Winter Crawford wasn't. And you think that was an omission of...
A great omission. And I am calling on the Combermarians to make up in their mind to fight the battle for recognition of this man.
And to lobby.
I don't know. I'm more certain Tory Pilgrim was a headmaster at Combermere also, eh?
Tory Pilgrim?
Tory.
I know there was a Mr. Pilgrim.
Right.
I don't know Mr.
And Pilgrim. He had... In that article, Winter Crawford, the builder of Barbados. On another article at his death, you had Harold Hoyt, statesman who earned his sleep. I say that to say this. If we are to educate our young people and bring the true history of this country, you have to recognize those people that were very forthright in the development of Barbados. Mm-hmm. And Winter Crawford is one of the most outstanding members that ever went into Parliament. Have you ever heard that Parliament used to be called the member of the colonial Parliament?
At that time before independence, yes.
Right. And you know who changed it?
The same man that was
in the forefront.
Sam Crawford.
All I am appealing to you, and I really call this matter a piece of Combermarian, to see if they could get hold of the memoirs of Winter Crawford and ask for recognition that he become a national hero. And my belief that if they're going to take down Nelson, obviously it don't bother me, but anytime it is being taken down, Winter Crawford statue should be placed there. Mm-hmm. If you could find some time to do some reading, I would like you to read. I'm calling all Combermereans to do such, so that this man will be identified. As I said before, he was the one who was responsible for the launch of the national insurance. He was the one who was responsible for immigration. He was the one who was responsible for the development of the Sunset Crescent and the East Coast Road. There are so many things that I could
what
mention.
What in Sunset Crest?
Pardon?
What specifically in Sunset Crest?
He was the Minister of Tourism and Industry. That whole development, he brought the developer.
Okay.
Because when he brought about the idea to Parliament, and he hinted to Albert about this idea of bringing down Americans from Florida, they'd be flooded. Albert agreed, but then he disagreed to an extent, where he said that if you bring in those foreigners here, you, I know you would not be able to hire a maid because the price that would be paid to them would be too much, and we would not be able to afford.
Okay.
But the whole development, study it, ask questions, and you'll find out that Winter Crawford was responsible for the development of Sunset Crest, one of the first real development in Barbados.
Okay.
I am asking the Combermarians. I went and I did an exam there, but I didn't get it.
Okay.
But since Winter Crawford is a Combermarian, I believe that the Combermarians should be proud. I just hear when I'm on the air talking about Combermarians. So I would like women to do some research. You could get the book. I don't know. The last time you had to get one from the Amazon for someone, the Memoirs of Winter Crawford. And anytime you read that book, you may have a different outlook. He was one of the founding members of the Barbados Labour Party. And he was also the person who was responsible about going to St. John. He was also the person that actually took his party with the Congress and negotiated an agreement with the DLP, and as a result of that, the DLP was able to win in 1961. It could not have a personality like that man.
Instrumental figure, you call him.
Pardon?
Very instrumental figure, you're saying.
Right. So I see, I'm calling on Prime Minister Mia Motley. I could afford to call her because she knew me for years, though, personally. And she know my political stand. I don't mix matters. And I'm calling, not only that, this is last but not least. In 1963, we had something called the windfall, where the sugar workers get a lump sum of money. And the government would have paid the sugar workers that money, and the people, the planters, would have had theirs. And that is where his first detachment came from, the Democratic Labour Party. Because apparently the Barbados workers, and it's there in the book, the Barbados workers, you know, wanted the money to put in a fund to pay the executive of the union a pension when the time comes around. And Crawford openly told them that that can't happen. The reply from Frank Walker was that the sugar workers don't know how to spend that money. And he went on to tell them that the same way the planters could spend theirs, the workers worked hard enough to spend theirs, and they could go and buy a fridge, a stove, or a TV that they didn't have. So I am calling on...
Just before you go, what was the outcome? What was the outcome? Did it go to the unions or were the workers able to benefit?
The workers got it.
Lovely. So he's really in the vanguard of the...
Exactly. So I am calling on you and to be proud as a Combermarian to see what Combermere produced. And I'm calling on... Not only that, you know, that's why I'm calling on the the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister, Mia Motley, because the then... person who was leading the charge of the Labour Party went about to destroy him with a Labour case. But
I have two persons on WhatsApp saying that your previous mention of Mr. Pilgrim, I know him as Mr. Pilgrim, they said he's not Tory, he's Charles.
And but Tory Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm. So that's a different one. Okay.
But it will be a different one.
Yeah, but then again, the times are different. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, when the Labour case came up, Grantley Adams had him for £1,500. And if you became bankrupt, you could not get into Parliament. And Ernest Dighton Motley took Crawford to Carrington and Seeley and borrowed the money in order to save him from Labour. So you must also recognize Ernest Dighton Motley, because if he did not save him from that Labour matter, we would not be hearing anything about Crawford today.
Well, you know, I thank you, and I take your point that Winter Crawford has done significant in the in the development of Barbados. But you know, there would also be another argument that there was this other gentleman or this other person who added value of significant proportions, probably at the same level or even higher than Mr. Winter Crawford.
And I remember
when the whole discussion on the heroes would have been done, when Mr. Trevor Marshall was out there saying, but there are other people and this body should be and this body shouldn't be. And you remember that discussion? That was a very rich discussion, very passionate as well. About the role that different people played and why was this person included or why would this person not be included, etc. So you will always have opposition either way on persons who have really significantly added value to Barbados and to our, especially to our social and economic development when we were in the arms of the colonial masters.
But I can give you further information, because the Observer and the very paper that Peter Wickham's grandfather, who was the editor, those were the two papers at that time who was in the vanguard of defending the workers against the colonialists.
Mm-hmm.
And I also found that the Observer, which was Crawford, actually had a connection with the West African paper named the West African Pilot, which have collaborated in an attack on Grantley Island at a British colonial road meeting at the UN General Assembly in Paris in 1948.
So you have the book. Are you here? You don't just let me get the book.
I tell you how to get the book.
Or tell me the name, the full name of the book.
I tell you the memoirs of Crawford.
Right, so it's just the memoirs. I have that.
And not a book. I can give you the...
You got to wrap it up, though. I give you a lot.
Right now. I can give you the article that was written by Crawford attacking the colonialists. This is what he said. He said, Mr. Adams went down there representing the colonialists. And this is what was said. Mr. Adams ought to know that the overall policy of the colonial office stands condemned before all men of goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Adams, by his irresponsible and inspired utterances put into his mouth by his British masters, had dealt a wicked blow at all the suffering people.
Okay.
That is an article came out the Observer.
Okay.
So you could do your research, and I hope that next week or whenever you come, you could come to the public and let the public know what you find about this great person that was ignored, Winter Crawford.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for sharing that. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Hi, Lisa. Morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
I am good, you know.
Good.
Yesterday, Lisa, I was attempting to bring some information to the public, but it was a panel that was set up to discuss the matter in the midst, and they couldn't get it on Zoom in the midst of talking. Then the panel came, David Ellis went to the thing, so I wasn't able to complete what I was saying. I just want, as an aside, to say, I don't even know if I should say it, but you know, when I was small, Lisa, around 10, I remember we were visiting our aunt, and they asked me, what did you want to do when you finish college? And I hadn't even started school, secondary school, and I said, I want to be a journalist. Mm-hmm. And Lisa, you should see their faces, because it was my aunt, my uncle, and relatives, my mom and those. Because journalists was something not in their kind of understanding as to why you'd want to be a journalist.
Yeah.
They thought you'd say a lawyer or, you know, engineer. Actually, before then, when I was like 6 or 7, I used to say I wanted to be a stewardess, a hostess, as we call
it. And they liked that.
And my father hated that. He said, that's a glorified waitress. And he'd take that thought out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I say all that to say, and when I was finished college, I made attempts to do mass communication in Jamaica, because that's where it was offered. And I switched from there and I went to other things. And since then, life happened. But I say all that to say, I am concerned. Language, use of language, you know, writing skills, those sort of things intrigue me. And that's why I like a good argument. I like a sound argument. I like research. When you're going to give a topic, you research it. And I am really concerned, Lisa, because what I noticed in the news, we are following the news department and most media houses seem to have this man-bite-dog approach to stories. You either something happened, a car crash, okay, that's fine, you carry that. But then it would be some important person, a politician says something, the head of an NGO says something, a man-bite-dog kind of story. And there is no kind of research gone into to things that you put out. So you copy something off of the AP or you copy something off of One Caribbean, which a lot of the media houses are affiliated with, Starbrook News, mm-hmm. VOB and The Nation, Trinidad Express, Grenada newspaper, Jamaica Observer, all connected with One Caribbean.
But so you know there are different levels. One, you're speaking journalism. There's the what's happening now, the topical information. Mm-hmm. There's the current affairs. There's the business. There's the, you know, so it falls in different categories. Sometimes
yes,
because there's so little of a time period, we get just sound bites.
Yeah,
and we don't know what the research has gone into. Sometimes we miss what the reporter might have presented to his or her editor, for which the editor extrapolates something and only puts a little bit out there.
But what we find is the end result.
Yes.
Maybe, as you say, of what a reporter. I try not to beat up on them too much because they don't have the say in what comes out. But I'm talking about the news department and those in charge of news. And the topic I want to discuss is Guyana. What mm-hmm. I found was coming out, and I said nothing up until last week, Thursday, when I spoke to Dennis Johnson. I listened, I watched, I didn't get involved. But I got increasingly concerned about statements that were being made about the Guyana election and personnel involved in the election. And every time the statement was made, it seemed to give the impression that one side didn't want the results, that the counting and the fairness of the vote, and another side was fighting to get these votes counted. And in my impression, beside that, the statement seemed to reflect was David Granger and those, because I remember Ms. Martin, election officer, from declaring the results. But what was not said is before that happened, a Jagdo supporter went to stop also Lowenfield from declaring results based on Region 4. So, but you kept hearing a one-sided.
But who are you hearing this from? Because I didn't hear one-sided. I read all the different types of things and I got different feedback.
I said to you the local media.
Oh, the local media?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And I'm saying
I didn't get that impression.
Based on what was, you never heard fully what the Granger party was saying. And what we found is, I heard today even a lecturer from UWE talking, some of the things she said was fine. But then the person at the FM station asked her, so why did they invalidate these votes? Was there a reason? And she said, no. But that is not true. What I found really questioning is yesterday's, the Prime Minister of Guyana is a lawyer, Mr. Moses Nagamutu was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday's program, the lady who represented Mr. Jagdeo party, I can't remember her name, Gail Teixeira,
mm-hmm.
kept insisting that the laws did not give the chief election officer the results, the powers that he has. Ms. Motley also, in her statement, say, by what executive fiat can you invalidate these votes? Meaning, well, who give you the powers to say that 115,000 votes has to be thrown out? And Mr. Nagamatu tried to say it, and I have researched it since over the weekend, the law gives the chief election officer that power. The Representation of the People's Act of Guyana, Chapters 1 to 3, Section 96 says, it is the responsibility of the chief election officer, Mr. Lowenfield in this case, mm-hmm. to ascertain or determine the valid votes cast in an election.
In collaboration with GCOM or just for him to submit that information to GCOM?
Listen to what I'm saying. To ascertain, his responsibility is to determine the valid votes cast in an election and to determine, and to produce a final result
to GCOM.
Based on valid vote to GCOM.
Yes. But that's not different from what they're saying. Yes, it is. Sorry?
Oh, yes, it is, Lisa. It is. And I'll show you how it is. Ms. Motley says, and she keeps saying it, every vote must be made to count. But what she never made reference to, in her first statement, she made reference to the Court of Appeal decision, which went in favor of stopping Mr. Mingo in that Region 4. But her last statement, and ever since then, the Guyana Court of Appeal, which has the final determination on certain election matters, made a majority ruling that votes count does not mean
validate.
The selection of the votes mm-hmm. is not just based on a tabulation and adding up the votes, mm-hmm. but it must be based on validity. Votes.
Yeah, I heard that. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then Order 60, which was when you know they called in CARICOM, there were five prime ministers who went in there: Trinidad Prime Minister, Grenada, Dominica, Barbados, and St. Vincent. We only hear from two because Keith Rowley, when the media questioned him, said, we are not going to get in to Guyana's internal business. Yeah. We will let the process resolve. Other persons jump in and talk about who shouldn't do what and et cetera. But what happened is you had the persons was a senior QC from Dominica, the chief election officer from Trinidad, the chief election officer, Mr. Gonzalez, picked from St. Vincent, and then Barbados sent in a political scientist, Ms. Giles Barrows, or whatever her name is. So what
Barrow Giles.
Barrow Giles. At the end mm-hmm. of the report, when they had the left and they came back in, I saw a picture of the person's presenting report being somebody from Antigua. He was not in the first lineup. The Dominica person, the Trinidad person were not there. You had Antigua, Barbados, and St. Vincent. Now, what I want people to understand, CARICOM report, they keep referring to CARICOM report, but there was an order that the government had to go to and they gazetted this order, which Mr. Jagdeo and Mr. Granger agreed upon, which stated that when you're doing the recount, mm-hmm. the recount has to reconcile the ballots issued with the ballots cast, you reconcile the ballots destroyed and stamped, and you look at the counterfoils of stuff, you look at the authentic the ballots are, mm-hmm. the numbers of voters listed and crossed out. I'm trying to go quickly because I understand how it is sometimes you get kind of stuck in midway. But I'm trying to educate the public. It is important to have another side. What Mr. Jagdeo was good at is running off with the narrative. I noticed one word, Lisa. The American representative kept saying, Ms. Motley kept saying, and other persons kept saying the word gamesmanship. And every vote must count. Use the recount vote that were counted and use that as the election basis. Nobody made reference to the Court of Appeal, which says you can only count valid votes. There were dead persons who were said to have voted, persons who were overseas. There were boxes that the seal was broken when they went in. And the most important thing, Ms. Motley kept saying that it was the last recount was validated by the election commissioner. When I listened to an observer representing the PPP who listed, the one was a lawyer and one was a captain, who listed what was said. They said when they went into the boxes, this is what they found. The GCOM staff, the election staff of Guyana, had a note in there saying the results in these boxes cannot be validated because of missing statutory document.
Which yesterday when the discussion was being had, when Mr. Moses Nagamuso, Prime Minister of Guyana, yeah. when he raised that, the lady, Miss Shire,
Tashira,
she said, but yeah, notwithstanding. So she kind of missed, put it aside.
Yes.
But beyond that, the challenge I have with all of this, and I understand the passion and et cetera. There was one principal point that was made yesterday, and that is, given this impasse, there's actually such a serious stalemate that there's no existing parliament, no legal parliament to say, well, let's recount. What's the next step? We can keep going to the High Court, the Discourt, the DAT, and I mean, this is so embarrassing for the region. Isn't that something that we should also talk about as well?
Okay, I'll note your point, and I'll just say this as it relates to I'll come to that exact point you're raising, but just to add to what you said about Mr. Shira kind of sidestepping the thing about the votes that were not legal. Also, she said that there was no proof. I want you to know that GCOM, the observer, sent a report to the headquarters of GCOM. Ms. Justice Claudette Singh is the chairman. And she sent and she authorized an investigation to the chief immigration officer to find out if these people name who had voted were there. She sent to the registrar of death to find out if these people had died and how they could have voted. And it was confirmed that those persons were not there and they were not entitled to vote, etc. So investigation was done. Now, I want you to understand what happened is there was a first report from Mr. Lewinfield, the chief election officer. Mm-hmm. And what he said, Lisa, was that only 40% this will answer partly what you're asking. Only 40% of the vote, of the results he could produce that were valid votes. So he asked GCOM, the Guyana Commission election, please annul the election and start over. Mr. Jagdeo objected. Mr. Jagdeo objected, and the chairman of GCOM said, we don't have that power.
Yeah, they don't. But they don't.
No, I'm not arguing. I'm just giving a sequence of people to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is why they went then and said, let Mr. Granger said, bring in Mr. Granger.
He asked for external evaluators.
Yes, bring in external persons and let them come in and act. This isn't somebody hiding and trying to thief. He said, bring them in. And whatever they decide, I'm going to accept. So when they came in now, they found, I'm hearing them say, but I don't want to say it as a fact because I don't, but I'm hearing them say, the observers only looked at 18% of the voter, 18%. But in this result, you had, for example, in Region 4, in a historically stronghold of the PPP, Mr. Jagdeo Party, Lower East Coast of Demerara, what you had there were 41 boxes, all belonging to the PPP, which had the observer report saying missing statutory documents, we cannot validate the results in these boxes.
Yes.
So when you had the step-by-step, you count the results. The first step, Lisa, is they bring in all these boxes and they count to them. But that's just step one. Step two then gives the chief election officer, Mr. Lowenfield, the power to review the ballots. The law gives him that power. So when he looked at it, he will look at, Can you cross-reference the number here with this? Is there a stamp affidavit?
It takes a couple of years.
Are there more voters? You understand? And when he went through it, he was only able to validate 75%. So that is what, and when he validated that, that is when he threw out those other votes. He didn't only throw out Mr. Jagdeo vote, 45,000 of Mr. Granger vote went out as well. And he has the power. So when people make it seem as this man just come up and mystically put these things, he has the power to do that. And after that, the final responsibility under the Constitution of Guyana that's given to him is he then submits a report to the chairman of the Election Commission, and she has to accept that report. I'll close by saying this. He has submitted the report. The report says that the Granger government has won by one seat majority. This is how the vote was broken down. The total valid votes he counted was 344,508. The number of seats to be allocated, 65. You know they have a proportional representation system.
Yes.
So the value of each seat is 5,300. Granger Party got 171,825 votes. So they got 33 seats. PPP Civic, which is Mr. Jagdeo Party, got 166,343, 31 seats. Mm-hmm. And there's a joint list party, 3,348. They got one seat. When you add that up, it is 65. So when people kept saying, and Ms. Motley and all the others, Mr. Gonzalez, and we recount, keep the recount, add the vote, the recount said PPP win. It is not accurate because the recount just added the votes, but they then had to go and determine if these were valid votes. And the Court of Appeal gave them that instruction. They must be valid votes to declare winner. And 115,000 were found not to be valid from Jagdeo's side and from Granger. Mr. Granger has been declared the winner, his party, because the chief election officer has already submitted his report to the GCOM Commission, but the matter is at the CCG to determine if the CCG has jurisdiction to hear it. And the Guyana, the law says it cannot. It stops at the Court of Appeal, but they will determine that on Wednesday, I think it is. But up to that, they ask them, hold your hand, don't declare winner, wait until what
you
decide.
Yeah. Yes. But you know the stakes are very high. This is a critical time. I want to thank you, though, for your contribution, giving you a little time. The stakes are indeed high, and I continue to watch with bated breath to see what will be the outcome first with the CCJ, where we are, and then what's the next step. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, sir.
I was calling to say the same thing that the last caller said.
Okay. So you probably don't need to repeat.
No. I'm repeating what you said. What the entire, what the PPP narrative is pushing out is that the only thing matter in the gazetted order that they did was just the recounting of the vote. They do not want to go to see what came out of the boxes there. All they are trying, they put notes to the Americans, the CARICOM, and everyone, we win by 15,000 votes, and that is it. Within the recount order specifically stated,
validation,
we are going to check to see if the votes are valid, in the valid, the validity of
validation
of the election.
Okay.
If you find all of those discrepancies inside of those boxes, how could you validate an election with no documents in some box, no documents inside? Then that is over 11,000 votes alone. 11,000 votes on 47 boxes, 11,000 votes. And them want you to validate that with no documents to tell you anything inside? These people are letting the entire world, and they get the U.S., the ACB countries, the European Union, and all them behind the back. I know what they promised them or whatsoever, but they like a singing for the supper.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I mean, as all occurs, the valid vote is really what matters, as in any election.
But, ma'am,
yeah.
But put aside that, I think the best thing for Guyana, because this racial thing is going on too long, the best thing for Guyana is for them to form a government of national unity and rotate the presidency that certain part
over the 5 years. Is that within the realm of the Constitution?
No, no. They could go to court and do that.
Make
just
it happen.
As how they went, just as how they went and do, well, I don't know about going to court. They could do electoral reform.
With such serious polarization that exists in the country right now, they are so anti each other. You hear the serious antagonism that exists within those two main parties.
And ma'am, I will tell you, if that doesn't happen, this election is a high-stake election.
Serious.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a high-stake election. And if something isn't come to bring a finality of both sides, there will be a problem in Guyana.
Well, there is a problem in Guyana.
No. I ain't talking about the election. Mm. I'm talking about another problem in Guyana.
Okay.
Yeah,
further problems.
The best thing,
yes.
Yeah. The best thing for Guyana right now is let them sit down, let the car come or whosoever come in, sit down and come to an agreement to do a power sharing. Mm. Because nobody in this right now don't want to give up.
I think it's a very plausible recommendation. Of course, it has legal implications.
But in a time like this,
we are in a world where, I mean, we got to rewrite the script. We can't keep going. Polarization hasn't helped Guyana in any way.
No.
So when you talk about, I mean, although the APNU scenario is a certain level of power sharing where you have a unification of people from different, you know, different independent entities. APNU
is the only party that have a power sharing government.
Yes.
And that, but the PPP, they do not want no power share. They just want power for themselves. Mm. Mr. Granger went and bring in other parties.
Yeah, he's
to for the last election.
Yeah.
Bring them to together. But the PPP, they want everything for themselves. They do not want to share.
Mm.
And that is the biggest problem right now in Guyana.
Okay.
I am a born Guyanese, and it hurts my heart to see that
watch on.
All of us living there and gotta go through those starting every 5 years. This thing keeps recurring. Every time election, this recurring all the time.
Yeah. It's time. Are they learning? Are they putting new things in place? Where are we going from here? Thank you. Thank you so much for your call. Dr. Brass Stacks, we have a full board. You're on the air. Good morning.
I just want to make a few comments on transportation. Yesterday, I heard a PSP driver call Mr. Ellis, and he was very upset because of the additional vehicles that were playing the routes or whatever. But let's start from the top. I think that, first of all, both governments of Barbados have created this problem for themselves, and up to now they can't seem to get it solved. I've made a few recommendations a few years back that I think, one, that the PSV drivers should be a age limit to them. Also, there should be a limit of license holders in that profession, because I think that when you have people driving PSVs that are below the age of 25 and just over 25, is a very serious indictment on people's lives that they are taking. And obviously, with the young brigade that is going on, that really can't change. And I think that we need to stop looking at the international countries and look at the Caribbean countries in particular. And I'll draw one example in terms of St. Lucia. St. Lucia, in my opinion, I would say have the best private transportation system. Not the ZR business, if you want to call it that, in the Caribbean. They don't go past 14 in terms of the seating capacity. And as you may know, I'm sure you know, that those islands like St. Lucia, Grenada, Antigua, and St. Vincent, they don't have a national bus service. So those buses are actually the bus service for those countries. Whereas in Trinidad and Guyana, for example, and Jamaica, they do have a national bus service, but also there is also a PSV system. Whereas in Trinidad, they have a system now that you can line up and queue up properly and get where you got to go. And although on Eastern Main Road, there's still that backup, there's still a problem. But they also have the expressway that they can use and so forth. So there are a lot of things that need to be put in place. And unless we sort ourselves out, and secondly, I think that the PSV owners, they are too much affiliated to government, maybe in high positions, who own 3 and 4 buses. And then when the government gives out permits, and from a political standpoint, it clouds the system. Therefore, you will never get it done, because you can't. Certain people who own buses, they don't want to touch or take away the licenses from them. And that's the problem where the pushback will come for the transport authority. That's one. Two, I read recently that the Minister of Commerce, Mr. Dwight Sutherland, he made a tour of one of the leading car dealers in Barbados, and he was somewhat bemused or whatever, and he said that he wanted to put the level playing field. But I want to go back a little further in the Oinafa administration, when that actually started out at the early beginning, when people were bringing cars willy-nilly in Barbados, and the government at the time had put a stop to it, and put a cap on the years. Yeah, a cap on the years, mm-hmm. and the type of vehicle that should be here, and the tires and so forth. And that brought some sort of stability to the system. And furthermore, if you have those major garages who have what you call a Queen's warehouse in the port that they can afford to bring their cars and don't have to move them right away per se, the single individual who have to go in, who want to get to that business, he has to get his cars out at a certain time or prepare to pay storage taxes or whatever.
Storage, demurrage charges, all those. Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the Minister of Commerce, he's going down a road that he has to be very careful about, because he's comparing apples and eggs in such a way, because the major car dealers have a strong financial backing, as opposed to an individual who's bringing private cars. And I think that if you want to talk about a level playing field, that's not a fair statement. And I must add that, you know, I'm very much impressed with the Prime Minister, the way she handles her business in terms of how she goes about her work. However, I can't say the same for a lot of her ministers, because I think a lot of her ministers are just walking along the system. I don't think they actually have any idea what they're getting involved in. Some of them make some very wild statements, and then they come to retract the statements. And this is the thing that has me a bit worried from a Barbadian standpoint, that if you put people in position to govern, and one would expect them to be very more sensitive in what they say in terms of what the Barbadian people will want to say, because if you look at the issue of the that I believe is unnecessary, Lord Nelson statue, to me, that's wasting time sitting down every day talking about Lord Nelson, Lord Nelson, Lord. We grew up as children and we see him there. What are we going to do? He ain't cuffing nobody in the face.
He is offending the activist.
But whatever he have done before, he have done. I mean, we as you said, we talk about history. We read about, so taking him, what will you take him down? What will happen? What he have done before, still have done. So it don't make any difference as far as I'm concerned, per se. So, I mean, we waste a lot of, that money could be dealt with in another way. My last topic, ma'am, I want to say, a couple of weeks ago, there was a young lady. She was from one of the housing units where she had a mental patient affecting her in some way. Mm-hmm. And the Assistant Minister of Foreign Trade, I think Ms. Sandra Husband, she was on the air. And I find it hard to understand that the National Housing Corporation is the executing people for these housing units. And if there's someone who is creating a menace to other people, I find it hard to accept that you can't move them, you can't do this, but other people are being offended by what that individual is doing. And I find that the parliamentary representative at the time gave a very lukewarm response to what was being said. I mean, and you haven't heard anything about it in terms of, have the lady who was pregnant at the time, has she been actually, she has been get peace, or the person have been moved? These are things that Barbians want to know. So when we get on the radio and we talk, let's deal with things that matter most to Barbadians. Have a nice day, ma'am.
Thanks so much. I was going to engage on your last point as it relates to when you have a nuisance in the neighborhood. How easy is it? Is it the role of the minister or the parliamentary secretary to take that person and move that problem from one constituency to another? You sounded as though you wanted a response in regard to where would we put a person with mental health challenges that is offending a pregnant woman. I am gathering that you suggest the solution be move him from his house where he probably doesn't have to pay and put him somewhere where he's not offending people. People with mental health do things that aren't normal and typical and necessarily with following societal norms and mores, and can be deemed in some instances as outcasts. Some of them present some very violent tendencies. Some of them get on very normal when they follow the right rules or when they take their medication. So it isn't very simple to just remove one problem because it is offending a few people in a neighborhood. And those are some challenges that a number of us as neighbors and as, you know, persons who live in communities have to deal with. We have people who, I mean, if I take the point beyond what you're sharing, we have people who religiously continue to burn and do the worst things that they're supposed to do for the neighbor next door. And the problem isn't always as easy. You may go and you speak to the neighbor and they really don't care because, you know what, they've been burning stuff all these years. Whether there's a requirement for a burn license now or not, they're still going to continue burning, whether or not we have a baby next door or a person with serious, not viral, but chest challenges, or persons with asthma and those other problems. We have some very insensitive neighbors, and sometimes it is not always for a politician or a person to come and fix that problem once and for all. Sometimes you really need the intervention of a number of agencies, etc. So I do hear you, and sometimes you do expect less lukewarm or more warm responses, but they're not always forthcoming in the circumstances, given all of the information that sometimes those people have more than what we have. Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Good morning. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Ms. Gill.
Good morning.
Yeah, how are you, ma'am?
Well, thanks. Hope yourself.
Okay. Well, there's always room for improvement, as they often say.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks for asking.
Okay.
Now, I want to concise to quick points, but then I won't go on to my main point. Now, you see this CARICOM thing? I've been watching this from the 60s and the days when you used to hear of Sonny Ramphal back then, who then became Shreedar.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Sonny Ramphal in the 60s. You had Edwin Carrington. You had Dr. Rex Nettleford. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look back at the efforts made, it's retrograde now with what's happening with the Guyana situation. I am not into the Guyana thing too much, but I'm only saying on the surface, the CARICOM advice and whatever, is a retrograde step, and we've gone about 50 years.
What is retrograde?
Yes, is the behavior and all the efforts that would have been touted by those persons that I've just called. When you think that you should be up to fruition today, you are back now with this contentious thing, and the CARICOM can't bring any resolve. This body can't bring any resolve.
I want to take you back to this timing that you're speaking of, though, because you know that in the last 30, 40 years, we have not had the death of a politician as a result of elections, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these 1960s and 70s, and the time that you're talking about, did we not have a death in, well, we have one in Grenada in 83, mm-hmm. more than one,
mm-hmm.
because of elections. We had one in the same Guyana. So I want you to be conscious and cognizant of the period for which you speak and remember your history, because we've had contentious and polarized elections across the region for some time. This ain't nothing new. So don't forget your history, sir.
Your advice is not very, very clear in that. I preface my comments this morning by the efforts of those gentlemen that I've just called. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying for all the years and all the effort and pursuit, and when you think that you would have garnered sufficient, that you should be in a position now.
Improved position.
Right, and what have you. Here it is. That this is has raised its ugly head to come and sort of trot on all the efforts that you think you would have attained.
Mm-hmm.
I've clarified that aspect of it to you, ma'am.
You have, but I just wanted you to know from whence we came. So in other words, I'm understanding your point to mean, yes, we had some challenges before and we should be in a better place now where we deal with things in a more congenial manner. But Barbados, let's use our type elections for all the time that I've known of them. We go back to normal the next day or the next 2 days. That doesn't always obtain in every Caribbean country. Right now, even now, after elections in St. Kitts, 5 government ministers have gone to court and requested a recount. You know that?
Yeah, yeah.
So we always have contention as it relates to elections. This one is the first time in the history that we've had an election, and after 100 days, we still haven't had, you know, a declared winner to lead the country. That's the first time, yes, across the entire CARICOM that this one has happened. But I am very aware that, I remember when I was growing up as a teenager, we heard about you couldn't pass on one side in Jamaica, or you couldn't wear certain colors, or something may happen, not something very nice. You understanding me? You feeling me?
I am understanding you.
Okay.
All I'm trying to say.
I understand you though.
Okay.
But look, continue.
This is really something else to think of it. All right. I am not here today in any way, but I want to bring balance and justification to what I'm going to say next. I am not in any way looking or thinking that they should not.
Mm-hmm.
And do the roads on the Highway 1 and Highway 2, mm-hmm. and all the efforts and the putting in of the pipes, it is very acceptable and very forward-thinking, 100%. But what I want to bring balance to is there is a road and there's a contract from Trent's to Apes Hill. Over 22 years, this road has been in disrepair. There's a cut rock here. You just hear something pass and blue. Is the bus now went up through what you call a cut rock here in Orange Hill, where you cannot have two buses cannot pass. That's very clear. But all day long, for years, the bus man has to stop, reverse back, and what we call an L200, mm-hmm. something that is a little bigger than a car,
yeah.
cannot pass alongside the bus, same thing. So one or the other, they will have to give, and somebody that is in the thing will say, you come back some more.
Mm.
Let one or the, I mean,
So you need a road widening there.
Thank you particularly. As a cut rock, if this is rocket science to do, I am saying this contract, the cut down by the pasture, the cut down by the pitch, it does not take nothing. I don't know what the prioritizing and whatever. You're going to tell me that something like this, you want to get some feedback, let every bus driver, that bus man who go up there, he can tell you how to reverse 10 times for the year already. Mm-hmm. And whoever, and the amount of persons that will come and say, we're all, you're right. Mm-hmm. And a woman got struck in that cut rock a day.
Ooh.
And let me tell you, she said real, and the hard. She said she called a 1,000 real and then said hard. The bike man struck her and came through the cut rock. The point I'm making, it is nothing to think of to bring that thing that what they've just done in Rendezvous Hill. I am saying everybody will say in their area they need some sort of expeditious dealing to. But I am saying it's 22 years.
I'm going to ask whether or not there's been any, not necessarily a petition, but has there been the neighborhood, persons in the neighborhood, have they written to the MTW requesting?
I talk about this here for over 20 years.
Have you written the MTW ever?
I have not written. Okay. But what it's just get the nation and come and punk. I punk about the four cars down there and they get it wrong about, though.
Right, so you come to bring this one to the fore now.
Listen. sorry to cross it, please. Listen, let me tell you something. Coupled with what I'm saying to you, there's a widening down. There's a in this area something called the learning center where the children that are challenged, etc. Mm-hmm. And onto that, there's a primary school on this road, and there's a widening of a deep gutter. If you leave the studio and come here, I can show you Steve's put up since 1998. And piece of red tape every now and again, man, it sort of go up with the rather than the elements they're going to draw. They come from fresh red tape. And those trees are precarious there, mm-hmm. precarious to some magnitude. I don't know how God is good. And I made a statement. People that hear me will say, I said, if you want any contact with the guardian angel, any day coming on, Trinity Cut Rock, the guardian angel living in Cut Rock there.
No.
But it's only God's mercy that somebody don't get killed in there when the days come.
Mm-hmm.
So I ain't not new is what I'm saying. You mean 20 something years, and you're gonna hear I'm not knocking all the efforts around the Rendezvous Hill and all the roads and the area wanting. I'm not knocking that. I'm saying incorporate somewhere like the Orange Hill Cut Rock here, and this is nothing to do in a week time you cut dig two sides, you got these straight notes there, and people could go through. You imagine if you had to say, well, I got one point station, you'd be inundated with the amount of people that say, well, but when you talking, but third, we're going through this Cut Rock here all the time. Mm-hmm. And my last point now, let me catch some, let me go on COVID. Now, there was the requirement that when you're returning, you know of this, that you would have to get your corn when you come here. Your quarantine, you go to Paragon, et cetera, et cetera. That has now been changed too. You have to get, before you leave your locale, get a certificate, a medical certificate. That when you get here, you present that. And once you're cleared, you're then allowed to come out. You don't have to go through the...
Where is this?
In Barbados. When you come from America, Canada, or England, mm-hmm. you know there's the requirement now that you have to get a certificate. Excuse me, I have... clearance.
Oh, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Good. So the discontinue that thing of when you land, you had to go up to Paragon and get quarantined. So that's no OTD do. You have to come with a certificate. But if you don't manage to get the certificate, excuse me, please, you go now, when you get here, you can have it done, mm-hmm. and you go to the Concord, they say they're going to use that as a clinic or something, that mm-hmm. you can have it done.
Or you can opt to. I heard another one about opting to get it done at a hotel, which will have a fee of $150.
But this is where you want to. But this is where you want to now put my emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to allow people to opt,
mm-hmm.
when you know how persons are and you don't mm-hmm. police them, I never like this thing about self quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to allow, because there was a doctor on the People's Business Center, he made this point that our test is not going to start with the influx of people coming in. But if you're allowing people to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be given the opt for whatever, and you don't police them properly, the amount and the likelihood of people slipping through, I suspect, will heighten. because of the kind of vigilance that is going to be needed with the influx of people, you got to be really on top of it to make sure every person is dealt with effectively and no persons will slip through. Because allowing that to fall in any regard, what's going to happen? You're going to find out that we will have the COVID now to deal with afresh. And it will be like, I mean, God forbid, I'm not pessimistic, but I'm real. This is what it is. And in closing, there's a concern that I've always had. All of the talk about airport and coming in, thing you hear about the commercial flights. But I want the same definitive to be given and the assurance that the persons that come in with the private jets, that they have to meet the same criteria.
Vigilance.
I went up by the airport and I saw a private jet leaving myself. Cause I don't deal with no here. It says deal with evidence and fact. And when I got by the fence, I saw a private jet taking off. And about four more were there on the tarmac. So I know private jets come. And interesting enough, people with private jets, when they come and they're going to the villas and what have you, they have to work with our own local people. If there isn't the same vigilance and stringent measures, then the workers here, the maids and the domestics and the gardeners and whoever that they encounter would stand to be up against a problem. So my take is to apply double, triple vigilance at that juncture, and I am expecting the authorities to listen with some rapid attention to what I've put and do not renege in that particular area. As the doctor says in my closing comment, is no, the test will be proven. I regard you, ma'am.
Thank you so much.